As someone who enjoys eating seafood, I completely understand the joys of the amazing flavors and possibilities that the produce of our oceans offer. From a seafood curry to sushi, from pickled fish to a bowl of garlicky mussels, or even a good old snook pate or hake and chips. The options are endless. Not to mention the amazing health benefits of fish, which we all know can be such a great source of omega-3s. I'm also aware that seafood is the world's most widely traded animal protein, with millions of people worldwide relying on fishing not only as a vital food source, but also for their livelihood. In 2020, an estimated 58.5 million people were employed in the primary fisheries and aquaculture sector globally, according to the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. But I definitely have a lot of questions when it comes to consuming anything caught in the ocean. Perhaps you were one of the millions worldwide who watched my octopus teacher back in 2020. Choked up with tears, racked with guilt about all the years of merciless seafood eating in your past. The South African documentary film was a runaway success internationally, winning armfuls of awards, including an Oscar and a BAFTA. And not only because it highlighted the incredible intelligence and relational nature of an octopus, but also the beauty of the underwater world. And then there was Seaspiracy, another Netflix documentary that questioned the sustainability of seafood while promoting plant-based diets. Although critics have questioned the accuracy of the documentary, it nonetheless played an important role in bringing awareness to the pressing need to further improve seafood sustainability if we are to reverse the growing trend of overfishing that our seas currently face. At the other end of the spectrum, a recent article in the scientific journal Nature states that because seafood is nutritionally diverse and avoids or lessens many of the environmental burdens of terrestrial food production, it is uniquely positioned to contribute to both food provision and future global food nutrition security. But the question that plagues me when it comes to this subject is how to make it all sustainable and whether sustainable seafood practices exist at all. It is a particularly important question when considering that the world population is expected to reach 9.7 billion people by 2050. I'm Ridi Tlhabi, and this is Food for Thought, the podcast designed to demystify the food landscape, brought to you by Woolworths. It goes without saying that the health of our oceans is directly linked to the world's collective food futures. Global consumption of seafood has increased at an average annual rate of 3% since 1961, with rising incomes and changes in dietary trends projected to drive a further 15% increase in consumption by 2030. According to the World Economic Forum, the global average consumption of fish and other seafood per person reached a record high of 20.5 kilograms in 2019. And in South Africa, fish consumption is estimated to be around 6 to 8 kilograms per person per year, which equates to less than one portion of 200 grams per week. But marine ecologies are under threat, predominantly due to illegal, unregulated, and unreported fishing, and emerging threats such as climate change, ocean acidification, and plastic litter. In this episode, we take a look at sustainable seafood and what we need to do to expand the production of food from the sea in an equitable and sustainable manner. The seafood we consume includes fish and other aquatic organisms that come from capture fisheries and aquaculture in marine and freshwater environments. According to the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, global fisheries and aquaculture production is at a record high, and the sector will play an increasingly important role in providing food and nutrition in the future. Total fisheries and aquaculture production reached a record 214 million tons in 2020. The amount destined for human consumption was 20.2 kilograms per capita. That's more than double the average of 9.9 kilograms per capita in the 1960s. As I unpack this important subject with the experts, I'll be sharing with you the conversations I had that really helped me to better understand the global seafood industry, not only from a consumer point of view, but also for the fisheries employed in this industry locally. You'll hear about a record-breaking endurance swimmer who has completed the most amazing feats in his efforts to raise awareness about the climate crisis and protecting the world's oceans.
How far would you go to highlight something you really cared about? Well, a British endurance swimmer has just completed the world's first swim across the Red Sea to raise awareness of the threat that climate change is posing to coral reefs.
And you'll discover various NGOs in South Africa and elsewhere in the world working to bring about change in the industry and the lives of fishers. I'll even be talking to the creators of a fascinating installation at the Museum Rijswijk's 2021 Textile Biennale in the Netherlands. The art installation hung from above and offered an interactive, ever-changing reflection on the sustainability of South African seafood and our fisher communities. And of course, I'll be asking the question, did a dolphin die for the sake of my tuna salad? When I imagine where my fish comes from, I usually picture large fishing vessels at sea, trawling nets through the water that capture anything in their path. But many trawl fisheries have been certified as sustainable by the Marine Stewardship Council. And today, more than 50% of wild caught fish are landed by small-scale fishers. Plus, 56% of seafood for human consumption is actually farmed through aquaculture. According to the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, there are currently about 4.1 million legal fishing vessels in the world today and approximately 20.6 million fish farmers. Together, capture fisheries and aquaculture account for the millions of tons of seafood consumed worldwide each year. I wanted to understand more about capture fisheries and the various fishing methods used, as well as the fascinating world of aquaculture. So I got hold of Gert Leroux, an aquaculture and fisheries specialist from Woolworths, to tell me more. Gert, welcome. It's lovely to chat to you. Let me put you on the spot immediately. Is there such a thing as sustainable seafood?
The answer to your question is definitely yes. I think Woolworths' vision is to be one of the world's most responsible retailers, and we firmly believe that the responsible production and consumption of seafood is a key part of a sustainable food future. I think if you look at it over the past 15 years, we've seen a significant improvement in seafood sustainability, and I think it's now mostly accepted that certainly within the aquaculture sector, that sector has generally embraced a business and societal expectation of environmentally and socially sound practices. I mean, right now, if you look at it within a global food system context, seafood is most certainly one of the most sustainable and nutrient-rich food sources. But to answer your question fully, I think it is important to define sustainable. So sustainability can never be fully defined as an end destination. I think we need to look at it as a journey, as implied by Woolworths' Good Business Journey. And that journey allows us to keep up with progress, improvements, and innovation so that we can viably meet growing demand while minimizing our impact on the environment. All of global seafood comes from either capture fisheries. So these are wild-caught fisheries. It is the last protein sector where we rely on hunting. So fishing boat goes out into the ocean and they're hunting for fish. So that's capture fisheries. So it's wild-caught fisheries. Aquaculture is also a form of fisheries, but it's culture fisheries. There we control the production cycle. We determine where we farm these species, and we feed them and we protect them from predators, for example. And aquaculture also involves corporate ownership of the stock. The development of aquaculture globally has been tremendously important. It has been referred to as the Blue Revolution since, I think, somewhere around 2004. It has for many years now been the fastest growing global food production system, and aquaculture now supplies around 56% of total world seafood for human consumption. In that regard, it bridges the gap between sustainable capture fisheries and global seafood demand. And quite simply, food, if you look at the ocean is really vast and fish grow really well there, and we have the technology to farm the fish there. At a farm level, I think aquaculture has fantastic sustainability attributes. The modern fish farm is an intensive, it's a knowledge-based enterprise, and it operates within strict standards and best management practice frameworks.
You may or may not have heard of endurance swimmer Lewis Pugh, who has braved some of the most daring, freezing, and lengthy open water swims in the world, all to raise awareness of the need to tackle climate change and conserve our oceans. On 26th October 2022, Lewis completed the first ever swim across the Red Sea from Saudi Arabia to Egypt. During the 16-day crossing, he swam over some of the world's most precious coral. And at COP27, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change at the end of 2022, he urged all nations gathered at Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt to cut their emissions drastically, tackle the climate crisis, and protect the world's oceans. This just goes to show the wide variety of people adding their voices to the important subject of sustainability. Where I previously had not had enough knowledge to make informed choices, I was starting to realize that not all fish is fished equally, and that it was possible to enjoy seafood from fisheries that operate in a sustainable way that preserves both fish stocks and the oceans for future generations. To understand more about the social and political processes of fisheries reform in South Africa, I spoke to Professor Muniba Isaacs. Muniba is a University of Western Cape research coordinator, and her research focuses on fisheries reform in South Africa, mainly through the lens of policy processes and implementation at small-scale fisheries. She also co-authored the book Beyond the Blue, which is based on research into entrepreneurship, the lives of fisherwomen, and making a living from the sea. Thank you so much for joining us, Muniba. I'm so delighted to have you on our podcast. And I'm also fascinated about your research on the policy processes and implementation in small-scale fisheries in South Africa. What did you find? What are those basic findings of your research?
I've been doing research in small-scale fisheries for over 25 years. And one of the key findings of my research from the beginning was that the Marine Living Resources Act of 1998 did not recognize small-scale fisheries in South Africa and defined them under either a subsistence, a commercial, or recreational. And this, in essence, was the problem. So through a formal litigation process brought about by NGOs and small-scale fisheries, they challenged these definitions of small-scale fisheries in the policy. So they challenge the individual transferable quota system, which is a rights-based approach that basically see a big fishing company in the same light that they see a small fisher. And it failed to incorporate them over 22 years, and this is now 2020, and it has resulted in many illegal capturing of rights at local level and mainly at the expense of small-scale fishers.
Let the public then understand in what way these rights are denied. And perhaps the best way to do that is to just find out what it is they are fighting for. What is it that would put them on equal footing with the bigger commercial fisheries?
Number one, it is a right to practice their livelihood by saying, I want to go out with my fishing boat and I want to collect as much fish that is possible with my human body, not with a machine, but with my hand and line. And then I want to bring that fish back and I want to sell the fish so that I can provide for my family. But I also want to have that fish to eat. And that is one of the most important for a livelihood and for food security and for them to make decisions about their livelihoods and also where to send their children to school, what food is in the family to food on the table. And also in terms of if they need medical care, that they can provide that. So it's the basic necessities that they are wanting to have in terms of an equal footing in the fisheries rights allocation system.
I mean, basic rights that every human being is entitled to, especially under our constitution and our Bill of Rights. But just getting back to, we use the term overfishing and the vulnerability that sea life, as it were, is facing because of human activity like littering, overfishing and so on. Can you then share with us how small-scale fisheries or fishers seem to contribute the least to this global crisis, and yet they are adversely affected by the practices, perhaps, of bigger players? Is that the case?
That is definitely the case. If you look at a small-scale fisher and a fishing family and a community, for them, sustainability of the resource is at the core of their practice. They know that we need to protect the resource so that we can have a livelihood not only for this year, but also for the next 20 years or for a lifetime. And that it can also be intergenerational, that I would be able to have this right also given to my family and my children can continue that right. So I think when we're talking about sustainability, it is about looking at the practices of small-scale fisheries and what footprint they really, really make in terms of to what they actually can extract from the ocean is very little compared to a big trawler vessel that can scoop a whole school of fish at one time, and also incredibly destructive in terms of the marine ecosystem, seabed, corals that they destroy while scooping that fish up.
Given the vital need for reform, I was impressed to learn that Woolworths has been taking action towards sustainable seafood practices for the last 23 years since the year 2000. To hear more about the work being done, I spoke to Rahim Hussein, Woolworths trading head and the chair of the International Pole and Line Foundation, an organization with which Woolworths works closely in their sustainable seafood initiatives. Rahim, what are some of the milestones in the Woolworths sustainable seafood journey thus far?
You know, when we talk about milestones in our journey, you know, we extensively partner with like-minded organizations, you know, WWF. In 2012, we became the first retailer to sell MSC-certified seafood on our counters. You know, we went on to disrupt the market as the first retailer on the African continent to convert all our Persane caught tuna to Pole and Line caught tuna, you know, the most sustainable seafood message. And then we followed that on with becoming the first retailer to sell, you know, Aquaculture Stewardship Council-certified, you know, farm seafood that we touched on earlier. And then last year, again, joining forces with industry experts in Global Tuna Alliance, the Global Sustainable Seafood Initiative. And we see this as an integral part of partnering with industry to create greater impact and change. So, you know, maybe one of the most memorable milestones that we can look back to is when we started out the Fishing for the Future program and almost became the first retailer to start putting on you know, the labels on our products, you know, to tell customers, you know, the green, the orange and red, a system that was in a highly complex industry, simplifying the message to that end consumer that says this is good for you or it's a sustainably caught and sourced versus, you know, in an absolute red icon that it is a no-go, do not buy, do not support these impactful sources of seafood. The International Pole and Line Foundation was founded in 2012 in the UK. It's an NGO globally based and is aimed at sustainable one-by-one fisheries that use sustainable catch methods. When we talk one-by-one, it's not, you know, it's not just enough to be sustainable, but to understand how we create a, you know, more regenerative practices that, you know, that repair what we are doing as humans on global impact. So Pole and Line, very simply explained, is one-by-one fishing. It is highly selective. It's a traditional way. It's a hook size that is used that prevents bycatch. And And that's a really important part to understand. Bycatching other harmful methods of fishing, you know, destroy the ecosystems in the ocean. They catch sharks and dolphins, and we've all seen the videos of turtles being caught in nets and the impacts of that. So the poline line or troll line or hand line is the least impactful fishing method to the industry.
Through these conversations with Gert, Muniba and Rahim, I was pleased to discover that when I pick up a can of Woolworths tuna and see that it says pole and line caught, I can be reassured that dolphins or turtles were not harmed in the process. And anytime I order mussels or buy a huge batch to cook, I now know that this is one of the most sustainable seafood options. The inspiring work of the International Pole and Line Foundation, with Rahim as chair, also includes upliftment programs and support for fisher communities with a focus on empowering women in these communities. As the foundation's website puts it, women play an important role in family nutrition and food security in coastal communities. Increased sustained employment for them will contribute to the food security of their families. Improve financial security through employment increases their purchasing power and allows them to improve the nutrition of their diet. These conversations around sustainable fishing and policy processes helped me realize the importance of policy and legislative changes. As consumers, we can certainly do more to make responsible choices when eating seafood, especially by choosing more sustainable options such as oysters and mussels. At a global level, the greatest impact would be for us all to push for legislative changes and improved enforcement of existing laws in the fishing industry. Small-scale fishers play a big role in the sustainability of wild-caught seafood, and I was glad to hear that around 42% of the wild-caught seafood sold at Woolworths is caught by small-scale fishers. Abalobi, a South African-based global social enterprise working in partnership with Woolworths, brings sustainably sourced fresh fish to the consumer's table while supporting the small-scale fishers who catch them. Abalobi's work with Woolworths was ramped up in 2020 in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. A tiered pricing structure for Cape bream, carpenter and yellowtail fish was agreed upon by Abalobi fishers to ensure the viability of making Abalobi tracked fish with a story available in all 31 Woolworths stores where Grays Marine runs a fresh fish counter. These stores are spread across the Western Cape and Gauteng provinces. A vacuum-packed catch of the season product line was developed in conjunction with Woolworths that would also enable forward traceability of Abalobi tracked fish with a story so that Woolworths customers could access the Abalobi QR code. I was really encouraged to hear the stories of these collaborations. What's more, the importance of supporting our fisher and coastal communities cannot be overemphasized, especially since artisanal and small-scale fisheries create jobs that provide 90% of employment in the fisheries sector, according to a 2021 Fish and Fisheries Journal article by Robert I. Arthur. One of the most original and inspiring awareness initiatives that I came across was a project by fisher community activist Hilda Adams and Studio Age director Hanery Fisser, who teamed up for an exhibition at the Museum Rijswijk's 2021 Textile Biennale in the Netherlands. Using fabrics, fibers, and found materials, Hilda and Hanery created an ever-changing hanging reflection that spoke to the sustainability of both South African seafood and our fisher communities. I spoke to the two of them, and Hilda shared some fascinating insights with me about her work as a fisher community activist. Hilda, just share with us how you came to be involved as an activist and what work you do.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Hilda Adams. I am a small-scale fisherwoman from Mamre, a small town in the Western Cape. I am a fisherwoman, and I'm also an activist for fisherfolk in South Africa. How I became involved as an activist I think with the whole beginning of the apartheid regime, I was about 12 years old when my grandmother was evicted from Greenpoint to Menenberg, and that was a big shock to the whole family. And to me, it was complete injustice, you know, to be moved from your home in a beautiful area to a flat in a very sandy area. At the same time, we were also, I'm born into a fisher family in Mamre, and at the same time, we were denied access to our customary and historical fishing grounds, which brought about more injustice and more expenses for our fisher folk.
So, Hilda, that history is so important. But just talk to us a little bit more about the story of the fisherwomen in South Africa, and why are they an important part of the fisher community?
Many women works in canning factories, and many women also work in the net repairing area, where they repair the nets of the bigger boats. It's still happening, and it's a special skill that they have. Why we are an important part of the fisher community? We are very passionate about what we do, and we ourselves, should we have better rights in terms of the fishing rights for different species, we can provide a lot of jobs.
So to find out more about the pair's creative art installation at the Biennaal in the Netherlands, I chatted to Hanerie. Hanerie, welcome to the podcast. So lovely to speak to you. Just talk to us a little bit more then about the concept of the textile Biennaal installation. How did it work, and just coming up with the idea itself?
So the installation that we collaborated on told the story of the women behind South Africa's small-scale fisher communities. And it also highlighted all the issues that they face on a daily basis, like the increasing food insecurity they're facing and also all the complications around restricted fishing rights. So how the installation worked, we took the women from Steenbergs Cove and Veskes Mankie that Hilda worked with collected broken fishing nets for us, which they then mended into large panels. So we then attached heritage recipes from my own family, from Hilda's family and their own recipes. And then the recipes included dishes like viskop soup, bright snook, fish fingers. And the idea was that the observer of the work would remove the recipes, and as they took the cards, it revealed embroidered letters that spelled the name of the recipes behind it. You know, so as people interacted with the nets moved, and you could still smell the ocean. So it was really just a reminder of these fragile communities that we face in South Africa and all the challenges that they face. I just really wanted to create a space where people could talk again about the wonderful work that Hilda does, the continuous struggle that our fisher communities in South Africa face. Also the story of the women behind these communities and the invisible work that they do.
I couldn't help smiling when I heard that the theme of this textile biennale in Rijswijk had been Food for Thought, the same title as we chose for this podcast series. Putting more thought into the food I eat and what it took to get that food to my plate has become a rewarding habit for me, as I've challenged myself to know more. It felt so good to discover that transparent, fair, and ethical seafood supply chains do exist, and that if I'm buying smartly, it's possible to trace back my fish to the very person who caught it. The social and ethical impact of sustainable fishing practices is far-reaching, and it encouraged me to know that there are suppliers and meaningful collaborations out there making it possible to support responsible, sustainable seafood choices. After all is said and done, I have a newfound appreciation for our fragile marine ecologies and a determination to make better choices that benefit both people and the planet for the future. I'm Ridi Tlhabi, journalist, producer, and author, host of Food for Thought, a podcast designed to demystify the food landscape, brought to you by Woolworths. You will find all podcast episodes at www.woolworths.co.za/podcast or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to having you along for the next episode of Food for Thought. If you enjoyed this episode, you can dig deeper at www.woolworths.co.za. And if you are enjoying this podcast, please give this channel a follow. You can also rate and review it wherever you listen to your podcasts.